For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and a cheery Efaristo to viewers in Greece, who've made it number 22 on our all-time list of views by jurisdiction. As you may gather, I had a chance to visit Greece many years ago and learned how to mispronounce that word, along with other useful ones like karpuzi. Also, thanks to the British Met Office. No, really, because after long, patient pressure by the Daily Skeptic, the Met has started to withdraw fabricated temperature data, namely local daily temperature records from non-existent weather stations. Okay, to nobody's surprise, they originally insisted that the non-existent evidence was carefully made up and thus could be trusted. For instance, figures from the Lowestoft station that actually closed in 2010 were generated from well-correlated neighboring stations, end quote. And you might be wondering how you could correlate data that you do have with data that you don't have, but it would be the wrong question, because we now learn that, quote, there were no such operations within a 40-mile radius, end quote. No darn. Still, they really were caught, they really were embarrassed, and, after exhausting the alternatives, they really seem to have started to do the right thing. Unfortunately, they still report data from about 100 other stations that do not exist, and then they wonder why no one believes them anymore. And of course, we also wish we could get Noah's thumb off the American scale with all that ghost data from all those expired stations. Still, one thing at a time. Or more, it's why we have an entire newsletter every week, including in this case, noting a Canary Media email lamenting Donald Trump's vicious hacking away at alternative energy subsidies that shouldn't be needed since apparently it's now cheaper and better and all-around marvelous. And that email chirps, quote, but renewables are at least doing better around the rest of the world, end quote. Meaning what exactly? Does doing better mean outperforming conventional fuels and so not needing subsidies from good people or bad ones? Or does it mean doing better at attracting endless tax dollars because they can't make money the old-fashioned way? It's kind of important to the story. In the newsletter, we also return to the deplorable ignorance of journalists who are trusted to write on science despite apparently not knowing that plants absorb carbon. Or in this case, journalists who think they no longer absorb carbon. And here we refer to the BBC, which said last fall, an alert reader informs us, that, quote, researchers are also worried that forests are losing their ability to soak up carbon, which could be contributing to record levels of warming gas in the atmosphere, end quote. Researchers here being the climate zealot branch of the WMO. Quote, but the WMO's scientists also says they have seen some evidence that as the world gets warmer, trees are not able to soak up the same level of CO2 as they once were, end quote. Oh, they says, do them? Yep, CO2 is plant food, so when there's more of it, plants starve. Or so journalists think. Which means it shouldn't be hard for them to pin this one on global heating. The Weather Network warns that, quote, portions of 7 Canadian provinces and all 3 territories will see flakes fly before Thanksgiving arrives, end quote. Now, Thanksgiving in Canada is considerably earlier than it is in the United States, because otherwise cold would kill the crops. But that consideration only makes it worse. And now, we interrupt the program for a word from our sponsor, which as always, is you. We haven't asked for a while. I don't like doing it. You don't like hearing it. But these videos don't make themselves. You know, we don't have big fancy budgets. We film here in my study or downstairs in my living room. And the only reason we can do it at all is because of contributions from people like you. So please, if you haven't already, make a pledge one time or monthly so we can get back to doing what we love best, which is this. Also, from the How Clueless is the Canadian Government file, they're all into renaming spending as investment to make their ghastly deficit less obvious, which will obviously fail, especially because they also kept investing in EV manufacturing ventures that promptly went very publicly bust. And now, hallelujah, quote, Canada installs 157 new electric vehicle chargers for Atlantic Canadians, end quote. And so woke, too. Quote, the projects also include funding for 2 Indigenous organizations to install EV chargers serving a highway retail hub and the Halifax International Airport, end quote. Fully 157. That's a lot of hype. Also, quote, since 2016, the Government of Canada has allocated more than $1 billion in funding to support the deployment of electric vehicle charging stations across the country, end quote. Just try to find one, though. Oh, and speaking of the Government of Canada, which under Mark Carney is now saving us from ruin by constantly flying places and uttering clichés instead of going to his office and dealing with files, his cherished Net Zero Banking Alliance just abruptly shut down altogether. Doubtless he is good at something besides self-promotion and the burning of carbon-intensive jet fuel. We're just not sure what. Then in the newsletter, we report that the Shine is evidently off planet Earth. At least various outlets, including MSN and Yahoo, have picked up a DPA International story saying, quote, "The Earth became darker from 2001 to 2024, meaning it reflects less sunlight," a research team reported in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, end quote. In consequence, the planet is absorbing more incoming solar energy, which means that it's warming up for reasons unrelated to CO2. So, is the finding that the standard climate alarmist theory is wrong? Heck no, climate science doesn't work that way. And now, take my ink blot, please. See, much of the climate-obsessed news coverage reminds us of that old joke about the guy who identifies every Rorschach test sheet as erotic, and when the psychiatrist suggests that possibly he's obsessed with sex, he replies, "Hey doc, you're the one showing all the dirty pictures." For instance, Bloomberg praises a private effort to help save Californian sea otters, which we favor in principle. But, of course, quote, "the endangered species are critical to ensuring California's coastal waters sequester carbon. With the federal government stepping back from funding conservation, the private sector is stepping in," end quote. You can't fool me, Doc. That thing's clearly a carbon sink, not an adorable marine mammal. Likewise, some Canadian political nitwit proposes creating, quote, "National Cities and Municipalities Day," end quote, to give us one more pseudo-event not to observe, especially because it would conflict with Halloween. But as to why we supposedly need it, quote, "the challenges we face, whether it's adapting to climate change, housing, or local economic vitality, cannot be met without the commitment of municipalities," end quote. Look, maybe just go out on Halloween dressed as a carbon atom if you're that obsessed. And so much for humor. Now for grumpiness, because we find it insulting to be governed by fools, especially misgoverned. I mean, if everything's going pretty well, it still feels more like dumb luck than the statespersons you think you deserve. But when you're being oppressed or steered on into disaster by clueless third raters, it adds insult to injury. Which helps explain conspiracy theories, by the way. It's flattering to imagine that we're being persecuted by mighty international cabals rather than trampled by homegrown dolts. But back to the dolts. But where should we start? Ed Miliband in Britain? A fine suggestion. But permit us, perhaps parochially, to choose Julie DeBrusen. Who? You may well blurt out, as though just informed of the latest winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature. That'd be Laszlo Krasznahorkai, quote, "whose works explore themes of postmodern dystopia and melancholy," end quote, in deliberately impenetrable run-on sentences and paragraphs. So, allow us to explain. DeBrusen was chosen to be Canada's Minister of Environment and Climate Change, despite her lack of obvious credentials in the field, having focused on Middle Eastern studies, law, and government neglect of Canada's urban areas, because the other candidates were just too embarrassing. But unfortunately, speaking of embarrassing, she thinks that ambition is the solution to failed ambition, so here we go again. DeBrusen was just put on the hot seat because Canada's Environment Commissioner told our Senate Energy Committee that our nation has the worst record on greenhouse gas emissions in the G7. And she's been in cabinet for a while, including under climate zealot Justin Trudeau, as well as climate zealot Mark Carney. Which makes it especially awkward, because they've been on this file like beavers, and instead of falling, the tree keeps growing. Combining soaring ambition with plummeting capability, churning out one grandiose plan after another to self-satisfied rhetoric about good intentions, only to fail dismally, congratulate oneself, and do it again, might humble lesser persons. But instead, with 6 years in cabinet under her belt, four of them in this field, here's DeBrusen's reaction to the news that, instead of going down, our emissions have risen since 1990, unlike any of our G7 peers, even the United States under Trump the orange climate demon. Quote, "Look, we have already said many times we know the emissions target for 2030 is really ambitious. But, you know, Canadians are ambitious. It's going to be hard to do, but we're going to keep working to make sure we get Canada to net zero by 2050, end quote. Now, that babble starts with the common fatuity that Thomas Sowell explores in A Conflict of Visions, namely, believing that the key to successful public policy initiatives is sufficiently strong and sufficiently loudly proclaimed good intentions. And that's a strange thing for adults to believe about anything. I mean, wouldn't get you very far in car repair now, would it? And it gets worse, because Canadian politicians, mostly in her own party, have had one thing and one thing only on the climate file for a third of a century now. And it is, drumroll please, ambition. Maybe what we now really need is reflection, but they ain't got none. Meanwhile, in our Have It Both Ways series, it's all downhill from here. Or not, because with impeccable logic, scientists reason that cold temperature limits plant growth, meaning as it gets warmer, the upper line where plants including trees can and do grow will travel uphill. And indeed, in 2002, a group of scientists carefully and logically made the case that the optimal range of trees would start shifting uphill with the dreaded climate change. Alas, nearly a decade after that paper, scientists published the results of their investigation showing climate change was causing plants to move downhill. Which was odd since they were moving uphill, but of course, climate change. In this case, apparently, rain was falling lower down and plants were chasing it. Or not, because you get to have it both ways. Oh, and we add that if temperature makes plants head for the hills, and they're not doing it, then maybe much of the supposed observed rise in temperature since 1850 really is the urban heat island effect, not global warming. And now, the envelope please. Roger Pilkey Jr. has shortlisted his top climate scandals of 2025, many of which we've covered. But we did miss this one on whether there's an upward trend in climate-related damages to the US economy after one normalizes the data, meaning corrects it for inflation and the increase in the size of the economy. We've commented on that generally. But Pilkey Jr. points out that in the years leading up to the last IPCC and US National Climate Assessment reports, there were over 60 studies looking at the question, and all of them concluded the answer was no, except one. So of course, that's the one study that the IPCC and the NCA chose to base their conclusions on. Which would be bad enough even if the study in question were actually valid, though an outlier. But it wasn't. It was based on a hinky data set used as a promotional tool for a now defunct insurance company. So, what was that you alarmists were hollering about peer review and following the science again? Finally, from the co2science.org archive and the Who Names These Plants file, Eupatorium adenophorum is so universally despised that it gets called stuff like sticky Eupatorium, sticky snake root, and most vividly, Mexican devil. And rightly, because it's toxic to horses and destructively invasive in countries around the world. But, like rain and sun, CO2 fertilization falls on the righteous and the unrighteous alike, and in 2012, five experiments showed an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 caused sticky snake root to grow an additional 27.4%. Yuck. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, wishing everyone would fix their data.